Hey there, folks. Welcome to Leader of the Pack on the All Paws Pet Radio Network. I'm one of your hosts. I'm from Fort Worth, Texas, Susan Herbert, the Lone Star Dog Whisperer. And my co-host is America's canine expert, Mark German.
Well, thanks for having me back again, Susan. I really appreciate this. It gives me something to look forward to each week. And I just love that Georgia accent of yours. Now, what part of Georgia was it? Savannah? All right. Well, hello,
no,
everyone.
I'm
Welcome
from
to the show.
Iowa.
Iowa, the corn state.
Yes.
Hello, everyone. It's going to be a crazy show. Just to let you know that we do welcome your questions and comments, and we encourage you to email us at pettalk@live.com. If you can't understand my accent, that's pettalk@live.com. Susan?
Well, a few weeks ago, we talked to Wayne McCullough. He's the president and CEO of Hyperbaric Veterinary Medicine. And it was so interesting that we've invited him to come back on and share with us the different ways that a hyperbaric oxygen chamber can be used to help your dog. Now, I'm only familiar with the hyperbaric chambers from being a scuba diver, and we use it for decompression illness. But Wayne has got some real interesting ways that it's used in veterinary medicine. So welcome back to the show, Wayne.
Thank you for having me back. I'm very happy to be here.
Awesome.
Well, welcome back, Wayne. Let me start off with a question.
Mark.
And I know it can't be brief, but try to keep it brief. Tell everyone exactly what hyperbaric oxygen therapy is and then how it works.
Sure. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy is an environment that contains 100% oxygen in concentration, and it would be under pressure, typically 2 atmosphere pressure. Where we're all standing and speaking, we're at 1 atmosphere pressure on the planet, so you add another atmosphere pressure to get to 2, and a combination of the pressure and the concentration of 100% oxygen does many wonderful good things for people and now animals.
So is it new for treating animals?
It's new only because of the lack of availability until we, hyperbaric veterinary medicine, decided to pioneer the design of a chamber that is meant specifically to treat small animals. There are a few vets across the country that tried to take a old human chamber and rig it up in such a way to try and treat animals, but it wasn't the ideal scenario. So now that we have this product designed and made available, there are more and more large institutions that are bringing hyperbaric medicine into their hospitals.
So, Wayne, let's say I take my dog into my vet, and for some reason he recommended hyperbaric oxygen therapy. In what situations would it be used?
Well, obviously it's not meant to treat everything. However, if you just use broad brush descriptions, its application would be for anything that presents edema, pain, infection. So if you think of those three,
wow,
then you start to look at the different modalities. It's like, wow, there's really a lot of application of hyperbaric medicine for these indications. Specifically, it's targeted for wound care. If it's from an injury, an accident, or from major radical surgery, or the outcome of a dog bite, that's a very common application, along with crush injury, radiation necrosis. We've had a lot of success with pancreatitis and sepsis for peritonitis. It really goes on and on, too much to the point where that I would hate to give you the complete list because it would be suggesting that, wow, this is good for everything. And it's not good for everything, but it really does do a pretty broad brush.
And what are the most common reasons that a veterinary or a vet would use this?
Again, most often it has to do with healing. Most often then it would be a healing of a wound, whether that wound, its origin was from radical surgery or a car accident, a snake bite, a dog bite. The healing properties of oxygen under pressure is significant, not only the healing, but also the reduction or elimination of infection.
So would
that
I,
be the most common.
I mean, I'm going to ask, is it safe?
Is it safe? It is safe, but like anything, even a car has its risks. You need to be adequately trained to safely operate a hyperbaric chamber because you are dealing with 100% oxygen and it is under pressure. But provided it is the people are properly trained, which we provide that training at no charge, it's a very safe application. The most common side effect you might see would be oxygen toxicity if you were to treat too often, too frequently, or you might see mild seizure if you apply too much atmospheric pressure. To eliminate a seizure, it would be simply just to reduce the pressure within the chamber, and you would see then the small animal settle down.
Okay, well, what would oxygen toxicity present itself as?
Well, it is a because oxygen is a drug, it would stimulate a seizure.
Oh, okay. So, okay, and I guess how does the increased oxygen decrease the infection?
Because of its anti-infection properties, where you've got different infections that can harvest or survive in a less of an oxygen environment. So the higher concentration of oxygen would be would not allow this growth. We look at a bacteria, something like a flesh-eating disease, which is thankfully not very common. One of the few cures known for flesh-eating disease would be hyperbaric treatments.
This is just fascinating. We've got about a minute to go before break, but why is this not used more often in treating humans?
Well, it's the world of human health care in the United States is controlled by Medicare, Medicaid through the CPT codes and reimbursement rates, and they always try and limit different therapies to control costs. So what you have for humans are 13 approved indications that are reimbursable. Although there are many, many more indications that could be helped and treated with hyperbarics, they're not, just because of the financial reimbursement issue.
And veterinary care is cash pay, so therefore no government agency is involved.
No,
well, we're going to have to break really quick, and we will be right back with some more questions, Wayne, if you'll just hang on.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike Toe Leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Hey pet lovers, please listen up. I want to introduce to you Nature's Logic, the most natural full-line pet food ever made, and here's why. Nature's Logic is made with a variety of high-quality proteins, such as beef, chicken, lamb, and venison. You will never find any synthetic vitamins, minerals, or anything else synthetic in Nature's Logic. Only real nutritional foods, such as dried blueberries, apples, carrots, cranberries, spinach, and almonds. Foods loaded with natural vitamins and minerals, as made by nature, not a chemist. Nature's Logic is committed to providing the highest quality and safest nutrition for the furry members of your family. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit the Nature's Logic website at naturslogic.com and find a store near you. Nature's Logic can be found in many independent stores throughout Colorado, New Mexico, and Wyoming. So do your pets a favor and start feeding them Nature's Logic and treat them to the very best. Nature's Logic is truly 100% natural, the way pet foods should be.
All right. Welcome back. You're listening to Leader of the Pack with Susan and Mark. And right now we're talking with Wayne McCullough, President and CEO of Hyperbaric Veterinary Medicine. Now, I don't know about you, Mark, but I think this stuff is fascinating. I would think you would find it fascinating as a former physician's assistant.
And U.S. Navy and dive people and everything else. I have a quick question. Wayne, let's just say I wanted or needed the HBO. How much was it going to cost me?
That's a good question. We have a very unique business model where we provide, for the right partner, the hyperbaric chamber, the technology, at no charge for the user. And what we ask in return is, on a per-treatment basis, $65. Mm. Now, for that, we're providing a very expensive piece of equipment. We're delivering it. We're installing it. We're training everybody, all at no cost. So it takes us a while to see the money come back for us, but it eliminates any resistance, and it allows availability of this modality more rather than less. Now, we don't dictate what the practicing vet would charge his client. I see a range of anywhere from $125 per treatment to $225 per treatment. Irregardless of what they would charge, we ask for the $65 each time they use the chamber.
Well, you know, $125 to $200 for treatment, I don't think that's unreasonable at all. I've paid a heck of a lot more for other procedures.
You know, if you look at something as simple as a snake bite, whether you're at the expense of anti-venom, now, there's a perfect indication for hyperbaric medicine where that they can actually see good clinical outcome without having to use anti-venom. So it is very cost-effective.
Wow. So instead of paying for anti-venom, you could have HBO therapy?
Yes.
Interesting.
And we have a number of YouTube videos about some of our different partners that have actually had dogs come in with snake bites, all swollen heads and pretty severe, and showing after a couple of treatments the quick results that you're getting with hyperbarics without the anti-venom. If you were to go to our webpage, you would see some of these video clips.
And what is that? And what is that website, Wayne?
That's www.hbmed.com. So HarryVictorMed.com.
HBmed.com. Okay, awesome. Now, are there any universities that are using hyperbarics today?
There are currently just two, University of Tennessee and University of Florida. They're both engaged in a number of clinical trials, but we're also speaking with another seven universities. I can't disclose their names right now because we're not under contract, but we're going to see all of the new graduating veterinarians coming out having been exposed to the modality of hyperbaric medicine, which is a huge leap for what we're trying to accomplish here.
Well, do you see one of these machines in every vet's office across the country eventually?
You know, I do and I don't. Originally, because of our model and the fact that we take most of the financial risk on our own back, we have to be very selective in the partners we choose. So I would describe the ideal partner would be a large 24/7 emergency hospital that would have at least 10 or 20 practicing vets, hopefully with a lot of specialty vets within that group. And that's only to ensure the usage would be significant enough to financially support our model. And we couldn't take that and put it in your corner practicing vet where there's only one vet with little patient volume going through. That just doesn't work. But we're looking at how, and this might be 3 or 4 years from now, how we can make it more available to more locations.
And that just makes total sense to me. You know, the small guy out in the country is not going to need one, but those emergency rooms, I mean, or emergency rooms or specialty clinics where the I don't want to call them normal, but the normal vet sends you to these specialists for ultrasounds and all kinds of stuff. And that I
can
see.
And that's what's happening now is the smaller vet is providing a referral to these specialty hospitals that now have hyperbaric medicine.
Nice.
Now, how would we find out who in our area would have one of those pieces of equipment? Would that be listed on your website?
It is. It's posted there of all of our locations. I believe we're in about 15 locations. We're a new company. We've only been at this about a year and a half. But we also have another 12 that are under contract that the facilities are just preparing the room for us to arrive and do the installation and provide the training. So shortly, by year end, you're going to see at least 30 locations where the technology will be available.
Now, these, I assume, have oxygen tanks attached to them.
Their source is oxygen. In any hospital, you're going to have an oxygen system, whether it's a high-pressure bottle system or a liquid system. We prefer to see the liquid system just because of the volume and the volume consumed by a treatment. With a hyperbaric chamber. And if you just have the high-pressure bottle system, we usually work with your air gas supply vendor and work with them to get a liquid system installed.
And how did you guys come about this? I mean, you don't have to tell me your secrets. I'll write them down. But, you know, just how did somebody, whoever did it, come up with this?
Well,
For
the last 15 years, I was manufacturing hyperbaric chambers for human hospitals and placed them around the world. And the gentleman that I have partnered with, Edgar Otto, he was what you would call a service provider. So he would buy the chambers from a person like me and put them in a human hospital and treat humans. And so we both were at this 15 years. Seeing all the wonderful outcomes, and we just got together and we thought, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if we could do this for animals? So I went off and designed what we have today, which is specifically designed to treat small animals, and now we're in production and we're placing the units. It was a very seamless transition. It was something that no one had thought of.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, I just think this is so interesting, and I'm so glad that we had you back on because more people need to know about this. And if you want to learn more about hyperbaric veterinary medicine, then go to www.hvasinvictormed.com. And thank you so much for coming back on the show, Wayne, and we will hope to have you back on in the future.
I'd love to be back on. I appreciate it, Susan, and thank you, Mark.
Well, you're so welcome, Wayne. Thank you again.
All right. Well, we're going to head to break. And, Wayne, you know, stick around if you want. Otherwise, we will talk to you soon. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo, healthy.
All right, well, we're back, and you're listening to Leader of the Pack with Susan and Mark.
Mark.
Now, last week, or Monday, actually, Mark, I'm going to jump in because Monday was National Dogs Day. Did you know that?
I did. My good friend Thomas in Arizona reminded me.
Well, in celebration of National Dog Day, there were 15 dogs that were basically designated the most famous dogs in history. Most of them are White House dogs that were made famous by their politically powerful owners. Some are movie and television stars, but anyway, what I wanted to do is run through these 15 here, see if you recognize any of them. Now, remember, they're real dogs, not fictional characters, so to me that makes it all the more awesome. But number one on the list was Bo Obama. He's the Portuguese water dog owned by the Obama family. It's probably the most famous for being mentioned in President Obama's 2008 acceptance speech.
They call him Bo-Mama.
Second on Well, hey, there's a new Obama dog in the Obama White House. I don't know if you heard it. They got another Portuguese water dog, and they named it Sunny. But I'm going to jump to number two. Millie Bush is number two on the list. She's the English Springer Spaniel that George and Barbara, George H.W. and Barbara, call their little child. Now, she was really popular, and Millie even wrote a book called Millie's Book, and it reached number one on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list.
Well, no, that's because Millie ate her book. No, I'm kidding. What's number three?
She may have. Number three, Pal, the original Lassie. Now, Lassie's the fictional character, but Pal is the rough collie that played Lassie. And actually, 10 generations of Pal's direct descendants portrayed Lassie in film and on television, starting in 1943 and most recently in 2007. So 60 years of Pal's descendants. So four.
I loved watching Lassie and Bambi. But anyway, keep going.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, I would have never imagined that coming out of your mouth. But Sinbad came in number four. Sinbad, United States Coast Guard. He was a mixed breed canine sailor on the U.S. Coast Guard cutter George W. Campbell. He served 11 years at sea, including combat in World War II.
Nice.
We've got another war dog up next. Lex was the Marine Corps war dog. He was the first active duty working military dog to be granted early retirement in order to be adopted. He was working in Iraq with the Marine Corps and was wounded in an attack that killed his handler. And despite his own injuries, he refused to leave the side of his handler and had to be dragged away to be treated by medics in that suite.
It's amazing what they do. I'm telling you.
I know.
It's amazing what they do, especially to us veterans.
We're amazed every day. Pavlov's dogs is next on the list. He's a Russian physiologist that won a Nobel Prize in medicine for 1904 for his experiments on conditioned reflex on the digestive glands of the dog. Sounds really gross. Yuck. Next after him is Capitan, a dog in mourning. Now, in 2012, ABC News reported that a German shepherd named Capitan had returned to its owner's grave every day for 6 years. And after his owner died in 2006, his family returned home from the funeral to find the dog had run away. A few days later, while visiting the grave, they found Capitan grieving at the gravesite.
I think Capitan, I just think, no offense, I'm not being cruel, but I just think that his toy was buried with his owner. No, I'm kidding.
Canine Rescue Team 911. Within 15 minutes of the attack on the World Trade Center, A trained search and rescue dog named Apollo was on site with his handler, and in the following hours and days, over 350 search and rescue dogs and their handlers came to the Twin Tower site and to the Pentagon to search for survivors and to find bodies.
And I know we saw that on the news even. You could see those dogs. Now, a lot of people didn't notice the dogs. They were looking at the chaos, but you could see on film in the news reports the dogs doing their job with the handler right next to them. And I think that's awesome.
I know. That was really cool. It was. They talked about how disappointed the dogs were because they weren't able to find live bodies. And so the dogs were really frustrated and disappointed. So that was neat to know.
I'll never forget.
Yeah. Buddy Clinton is next. He is President Bill Clinton's chocolate lab, and he joined the Clinton family in the White House in 97. And he didn't get along with their other pet, a cat named Sox. Can't blame him with that one. So the two were kept in separate quarters. We've got a couple more presidential dogs here.
What? Bill Clinton's dog, I heard, just stayed under his desk all the time.
Yeah, but they had to keep him away from the cat because they didn't get along. We could have helped with that, but they didn't call us.
Adopt the cat out to the bushes.
So, Fela Roosevelt is next, and she was Franklin D. Roosevelt's Scottish Terrier, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but Fela or Fala, whatever.
Yeah,
she
that's
traveled
right,
with the Roosevelts. And she traveled with them a lot. She was frequently covered by the media, and a statue of her is featured at the Roosevelt Memorial in Washington, D.C., and she's the only presidential pet so honored.
And I've actually seen that, by the way. I've actually seen that statue.
Okay. Rex Reagan is next. Rex was a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel owned by Nancy and President Ronald Reagan. He was a Christmas present to Mrs. Reagan from William F. Buckley. He was a conservative commentator, and he was named after the White House chief usher, Rex Scouten. And we've only got a couple minutes left, so I'm going to rush through these last couple. Leica was a Soviet space dog. She was a stray dog found on the streets of Moscow. And she was trained along with two other dogs for Soviet space program in 1957. Eventually, she was selected as the sole occupant, and she became the first animal to orbit Earth. At the time, the technology didn't exist to deorbit the spacecraft, so she was euthanized prior to oxygen depletion on the sixth day. So it was actually revealed later that the dog, she died within hours of launch due to overheating. But either way, it's a sad story. And our last one is the Nixon dogs. He had three dogs in the White House. King Tamaho, Vicky, and Pasha. And they were in... often talked about in his famous Checkers speech was his fourth dog that didn't serve in the White House was Checkers. Well, we've got to run to break real quick, and we are going to be back in a few minutes with Dogs in the News.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial. No sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat-treated to help retain all the natural, rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com. Order code 33955. Put your pet on the path to good health.
Okay, we are back. You're listening to Leader of the Pack with Susan and Mark. And now we've got a few good dogs in the news story. So listen close. Wait. I'm going to start here. What?
Wait,
what?
You're supposed to say, and now it's dogs in the news. Say that.
Oh, and now it's dogs in the news.
When news breaks, we fix it. All right.
Go ahead. I'm so sorry I missed that part. Well, last Friday, the second largest dogfighting raid in U.S. history rescued 367 dogs and led to the arrest of 12 people from several different states. Federal and state officers served a search warrant on Friday in Alabama and Georgia, and they seized pit bulls from Alabama, Georgia, and Mississippi. They recovered over $500,000 in cash that is believed to be tied to illegal gambling on dogfights. The defendants face several charges related to dogfighting and gambling, and each charge carries up to 5 years in prison. The raids are the result of a three-year investigation. Wow, that involved state, local, and federal agencies. And many of the rescued dogs were emaciated, wounded, and found chained with no access to food and water. Officials with the ASPCA and Humane Society of the United States are helping to care for the 367 seized dogs at undisclosed locations, and they have to be kept there as evidence while the case is in progress. So I'm just wondering what they're going to do with that $500,000 in cash. Now, what do they do when they get money like that? What happens to it? Does it just go in the police fund, or maybe this $500,000 should go back to, the Humane Society or somebody
or shelters,
to help
right.
dogs in need. Give it to, just divvy it up to shelters in those three states. I really hope that's what they do. And
why does it
take 3 years to bust? I mean, 3 years is a long time. Why does it take 3 years to bust up something like that? I don't get that.
Well, it happened, though. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
They did it.
Yeah.
And, I say
they might have saved more. They might have saved more if it had only taken 1 year.
That's a good point. Yeah. Sooner they caught them, the less dogs died . So, all right. Well, I'm not going to argue politics, but here's the latest on President Obama's policies and decisions. They've recently come up with a legislation on a federal level speaking out against this, what do they call it, the ban on bully breeds. Yeah, breed specific,
okay.
I couldn't remember. Breed specific legislation with a position on the bully bans, if you would. Colorado, if they're illegal, bully dogs or bull. Pit bulls are illegal in Colorado. Well, here's what the Obama's people wrote. It says, we don't support breed-specific legislation because research shows that bans on certain types of dogs are largely ineffective and often a waste of public resources. In 2000, in 2000, CDC looked at 20 years of data about dog bites and human fatalities in the United States from a dog. They found that fatal attacks represent a very small proportion of dog bite injuries to people, and that it's virtually impossible to calculate bite rates for specific breeds. And I agree with that, because nobody goes to the emergency room when their Chihuahua bites them.
Right.
But they will go to an emergency room and get reported if it happened to be a bully breed or any other dog for that matter. But nobody's going to run to the emergency room because their Chihuahua bit him. So CDC noted that the types of people who look to exploit dogs aren't deterred by breed regulations. They're still going to be fighting pit bulls out there. I don't care if they're Michael Vicks and all them people. They're still going to be out there. So doing this really is not going to change anything you're just going to have more bully breeds stored somewhere. Basically, people are having to get run out of town because they have a bully breed. There's a man in Colorado. He's a lawyer. He's paralyzed or in a wheelchair, and he has a pit bull service dog. They kicked him out of Colorado. he had to send his dog over to the next state, wherever that is. I don't know where Colorado is. No, they sent him. He had to move his dog across the state line, and it's a service dog. So that obviously is a big legal battle going on. What do you got, Susan?
Well, I just have a comment. You know, folks, the simple fact is that dogs of any breed can become dangerous when they're raised to be aggressive, and that can be intentionally or unintentionally. And let me tell you, the dogs we work with, for the most part, they were unintentional. Nobody, you know, the people we work with, they don't try to make their dogs aggressive, but they just don't know, you know, dog psychology. And what they're doing is backwards, and it's confusing and miscommunicates to the dog. And so unintentionally, their dog becomes aggressive, and but it can be fixed. So the point I guess I'm making is, you know, any breed can become aggressive. So really, what difference does it make what specific breed? There's no reason for specific breed legislation or breed-specific legislation. So anyway, hopefully, since Obama came out with that policy, Congress and the House will step up, and we'll see similar policies across the U.S. So now, number three, we've all heard politicians and business owners and mafia lords have secret bank accounts abroad, overseas. And the law in most countries states that when an individual enters a country, they have to pay taxes on possession, including cash, that surpasses a certain amount. And I guess that's why they ask you on the plane to fill out that little form. And I think the number I've always seen is like $10,000. If you're coming into a different country with over $10,000, you've got to pay taxes. Now, many people opt to smuggle money in their luggage, and they try to evade paying those taxes. But authorities are now using dogs to sniff out large sums of cash. So in the Frankfurt airport, authorities are putting up to 37 sniffing dogs to work, and they're experts in detecting illicit drugs, and among those 37, three of them are detecting money. They go through a seven-month training program, and once it's completed, they are capable of detecting hidden euros or dollars. The canine unit has been...
I need that kind of dog.
So do I. We need to teach Maverick just
money.
We just need to teach Maverick to sniff out money, because we need him to do that when we're
my
flying all over the place.
My dog can always sniff out my old socks.
Oh, and well, those should be pretty easy to sniff out, in my opinion. So this canine unit's been in place for some time now, and they've actually captured 20 smugglers that have concealed cash. So anyway, smugglers, beware. I wouldn't be hiding money in your suitcase, because they are on, these dogs are on to your illegal tactics. But
yeah,
we're going to head to break here. We've got a hot topic to discuss in our next segment. Our next segment, What Were You Thinking? And, of course, it's hot because we're right in the midst of it. So we'll be back in a few minutes, and we'll talk about that, and we'll be right back.
Attention all pet lovers. Do you love your furry pet? Well, I want to introduce to you Paws and Silk, the first all-natural silk-filled pet bedding and apparel line that helps improve your pet's overall health and wellness. Paws and Silk is made using luxurious long-stranded silk and all-natural breathable cotton. Each product will help keep your pet cool and comfortable all year long. Paws and Silk pet beds and coats will also work as a barrier against dust, mites, and other allergens. Not only are they fashionable, but they also don't take on your pet's odor. Better yet, they're even machine washable. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit Paws and Silk website at pawsandsilk.com to learn more about Paws and Silk and their incredible products. That's PAWSNSILK.com. You can buy directly from the site, and they even ship all over North America. How easy is that? For more information, go to pawsandsilk.com or call their toll-free number, 877-678-7455.
Our dogs are part of our family, an integral part of our lives. providing comfort, exercise, and companionship. All too often, however, this relationship is tested through dog naughtiness and general poor behavior. Our dog does not come when cold. He digs the garden and many other issues that create frustration and a break in the relationship we seek. You love him, but you don't like him. Today's e-callers remote trainers have been developed to help you train your dog and overcome these issues that can result in separation from the family and worse. E-collar technology has been developed to help the everyday dog owner. Collars that set limit on the levels of stimulation and therefore limiting mistakes. If you seek a training aid that will assist you overcome the unwanted issues, e-collar technology products have developed dog training technology for the modern world that uses the lowest levels of distractive stimulus to improve behavior and reduce stress. www.ecollar.com. That's www.ecollar.com.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Leader of the Pack with Susan and Mark, and it's that time for What Were You Thinking?
What were you thinking?
Now, this might get a little heated because we're a little heated up about it at the moment, but yesterday Mark was tagged on a Facebook forum on one of the local, I guess we would call them a rescue and support group for a specific breed. Anyway, he was tagged in because somebody had recommended, somebody was writing in asking for help that they were having on, you know, they were having some issues with one of their dogs, and they contacted the support group asking for help. And so somebody had tagged Mark and said, you know, it suggested that the guy that needed the help contact Mark to get, you know, help from Mark as an expert. So,
do you know what the problem was? Wait, Susan, what was the problem?
Well, that's what I was going to read next, is I was going to read from the Facebook forum exactly what he was asking help for. Basically, his post said, I could use some advice. My baby is almost two. She is loyal, follows me everywhere, and she has lived inside all of her life. She loves to play, but a couple months ago or so, she started trying to bite. She even bites me if you try to make her move on the bed or while she is under the bed. She hasn't really tried to bite other than that, just only on the bed. Today, if I didn't have a hold of her collar, she would have gotten me pretty good. All I wanted her to do was move from the head of the bed to the foot of the bed. I'm going to start by not allowing her in my room anymore, which breaks my heart because I love my dog. So I guess what I wanted to do next is share some of the advice that was given to this person. One of the comments that was made, one person giving advice said that she wanted to share some advice she received on how to deal with bully teens. I guess that disclosed that it was a bulldog. It's a bully breed. But she says the advice that she got is that if your pet attempts to bite, do not stop what you are doing. Get assertive and proceed. It's your bully. She's just testing the boundaries. If you back away, she's getting what she wants. If you hesitate, even for a split second, she's getting what she wants. This is where it gets even worse. If she bites you, cry in agony and ignore her. It's your bully. She doesn't want to hurt you. I don't know what to laugh or what on that one. I'm sorry.
If a bulldog bit me, I'd cry in agony.
And ignore her.
Yeah. Well, I'd ignore her because I'd have to go to. I would ignore her because I'd have to go to the emergency room.
Right. I'm sorry to laugh at that one, but that's, I don't know. Anyway, okay, so the minute your skin touches her mouth when wrestling, stop playing. Again, it's your bully. She wants to play with you. So if you stop when her mouth touches you, she won't let that happen again. Really? Okay.
And why are they wrestling with it?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Always remember to keep her exercised and disciplined. You should spend at least 5 minutes a day retraining her. It's mental activity. You know your dog better than anyone, so just go figure out what behavior she's displaying and correct it. Don't reward it. Good luck. Well, now we could sit here and pick this one apart. But I wanted to
there's
get
there's got to be more.
There is. There's some more advice. That's what.
Okay.
Okay, so next advice. A squirt bottle is a good option, and I agree that she should not be put in the room for at least a while and then try again. She's saying, this is my spot, and I do not want to be bothered, and I'm in control. So that advice basically is use a squirt bottle and remove her from the room.
Okay, next advice. I have a dominant female, and she is no longer allowed on the bed or high places because it makes her feel like she is the alpha. I learned this after working with a trainer. She also wears a harness at all times because it helps her to understand that I am in control and I can pull her back or move her without her being able to bite me. How does the harness do that? I'm trying to figure out.
Well, how does it keep a dog from biting?
Yeah, and it helps. How does it help her to understand that the human is in control? Okay. Anyway, next one. The bed is the issue. Then the bed needs to be removed from the dog. Separate her from the room. She is taking territory over that item or space. So to be the pack leader, take away the bed, set up doggy gate so she can't go in the room at least for a few months. But if it returns, she might have to permanently stay out of the room. Okay, and there was actually a few pieces of pretty decent advice. What?
Wait a minute. It'd be hard for me to remove my bed from my bedroom.
Is no, they're
remove,
talking about
remove
no.
the bed. I'm kidding. I understand. Avoiding the situation, putting a dog in another room. Somebody on TV teaches that, and I'm not going to mention her name. But it's avoidance. That's not going to correct anything.
So I guess what is so frustrating to both of us is that all of this advice is, you know, and I even stated this on the forum once I jumped in. You know, it's to have a forum where people ask for advice on maybe some random behavior issues, like my dog's not eating, any suggestions, or my dog has a rash that looks like this. Has anybody seen it? What did you do? Or my dog is scared of men with hats. You know, those are just kind of random issues and you know, people jumping in with their advice on that of what's worked for them is all fine and dandy, and I think it's wonderful that they have different forums out there so people can get some help. But if you recall what the person wrote in about the dog is biting, we have aggression here, and all of these people jumping in with their advice, and our, you know, opinion of the advice is that it's worthless. It is just out of line. At when your dog is biting, when you have an aggressive dog on your hands, that is when you get an expert involved. These people with their, I'm sure, well-meaning people with their advice of using a squirt bottle, or the one that I really liked is if your pet attempts to bite, do not stop what you're doing. Okay. Are you serious?
And if he does bite, scream in agony.
Yeah, scream in agony and ignore. Seriously? I mean, these kind of ridiculous methods or techniques, wherever they got them from or however they thought them up, is going to get somebody bitten and bitten badly. So now the thing to point out is all of these people gave advice. Not one of them is a trainer or has any kind of professional experience in canine behavior, and that is really the point that I'm trying to make. If you have a dog that's biting, get help from a professional. Quit taking advice from these ridiculous people with their ridiculous squirt bottle. You don't think a dog might bite after you squirt him in the face with water? So anyway, we're just frustrated.
And on the bottom line, Susan, real quick, was, you know, they asked for my advice. I'll give my advice to anybody. We've been doing this a long time. I'll give them advice. It doesn't cost me anything to type a few words. But you know, I can't type everything I'd have to say to them. So what I offered them is for them to call me. They can call me. I'll tell them. I'll fix their dog in an hour over the phone. But like you say, to listen to this stuff, we cringe because we know what's going to happen. Somebody's going to get bit, and then they'll have to scream in agony. Susan? Oh.
What? We're done. I think we're out of time.
Yeah, what were you thinking?
Yeah, what were you thinking? So we are out of time for this week. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. If you have questions, please email us at pettalk@live.com, and we hope you'll come back and listen next week.